Blog Talk Radio.
From deepest, darkest Africa, across the polar ice cap, spanning the jungles of South America, without a compass, without a map, Blog Talk Radio and Wildlife Educational Services presents Larry Batson's Wild World. Discover the wonders of the natural world with nationally known wildlife educator Larry Batson as we visit his wild world.
Hello, everyone, from the remote jungles of Clinton Falls, Indiana. This is Larry Batson, and you are listening to Larry Batson's Wild World in this magical network known as Blog Talk Radio. A big hello to our listeners around the world tonight. We have a fantastic show planned all the way from the fine city of St. Louis, Missouri, joining us in a little bit later, Asher Ben Ruby, to his fans and friends in the Indiana. Remember him as Adam Smasher. It's going to be a great hour. This is going to be a party, everyone, so we hope you got a comfortable seat, a cold beverage. Enjoy the show tonight, and also remember, tell your friends. You can download the show after the broadcast at any time on Blog Talk Radio, free of charge. It's been a wonderful, wonderful week for me because in the last 3 weeks I've been a little bit under the weather, so as I was telling many folks today, I'm finally feeling a little bit closer to 100%, so really looking forward to tonight's program. As always, handling the technical responsibility, Melissa Hovey and Wayne Larson over in the fine state of Ohio. And from his massive Wild World News studios in Indianapolis, Dr. Henry Day. Good evening, Doctor.
Well, good evening, Mr. Batson. You got a little older this week, didn't you?
Yes, I did get a little bit older. I feel just as... I think next year is going to be the scary year with the old 6-0. So, but yeah. And I have to tell you, for all of my Facebook friends, I received several birthday greetings. I was overwhelmed, humbled, and it was pretty cool. So I had a great birthday, and I don't know if I'm looking forward to that. I think things will get better after 60. That's what I'm told. So we'll see what happens.
It's amazing that you've gotten this far.
You know, that's absolutely the truth.
It is.
I think I may have told our listeners what happened about 2 weeks ago when I was in the snake room, and we had a western diamondback rattlesnake that a friend sent me from Texas, and it struck the top of its cage so violently and so hard that venom comes spewing out across the room and into my eye. So I thought, I can still see, but I'm thinking, man, I'm a lucky guy. I absolutely didn't take this as long.
Absolutely.
The following portion of Larry Batson's Wild World is brought to you by Alphabet Swamp, the new children's book by Cheryl and Larry Batson. Order your autographed copy today at www.larrytheanimalguy.com or send check or money order for $10 per copy to WES. 4140 North, 600 West, Greencastle, Indiana, 46135, shipping and handling included.
It's now time from his broadcasting mecca in Indianapolis, Indiana, the distinguished Dr. Henry Day with the Wild World News.
Well, good evening. This is Dr. Henry Day with the Wild World News. Now, for over a year, we've been reporting on the dwindling bat population. Well, something is being done about it now. The Interior Department unveiled a national management plan to address the fungus that has killed more than a million bats in 16 states and 3 Canadian provinces since 2006. Now, the Interior Secretary, Ken Salazar, said the plan provides a roadmap for researchers and federal, state, and tribal agencies to determine how to combat the white nose syndrome. Now, the plan was announced for more than 170 experts that gathered in Little Rock to present the latest research on how to combat the fungus and find a cure. Now, why have we been reporting on this and why is it so important? Well, you're going to find out this year because it's going to be a banner year for the insects. with the bat population dwindling as it has, things like mosquitoes, spiders, anything that runs, crawls, and flies, it's going to be a banner year for them. So get ready for the bugs this year, folks.
And, you know, I have not seen the bat that hangs around our nightlight here by the wild animal compound, so I'm worried about that.
Well, hopefully he's visiting relatives, and he'll be back before you know it.
I hope so.
Well, as you know, we've had so much rain here in the Midwest the last month. It seemed like it rained for an entire month. Well, everything's green and plush right now, but the rain's got to go somewhere. Biloxi, Mississippi is where it's headed. Now, state marine officials expect the oyster industry to experience extreme losses this year because of the record amounts of fresh water heading down the Mississippi River when it reaches the salty Mississippi Sound. Now, oysters will be hit hard because they're a stationary species. They, you know, they cling to rocks and they fix themselves to rocks, but they're hoping that the shrimp, the finfish, and the crabs, will, which are mobile, will be able to keep ahead of the fresh water.
That's an unfortunate situation, man. There are some people in dire straits because of all this rain down in that part of the country. Poor Mississippi, I mean, and the southeast.
Yeah.
From Katrina to this, oh, it's just, and the tornado, just terrible.
Yep. And now they've got to worry about the oyster industry.
Yeah, it rains, it pours, they say, I guess.
All right, now I'm not sure how you're going to handle this story.
Uh-oh.
Now, how many tigers do you have at your wildlife preserve?
Well, we have 6 tigers.
And I know some of them used to do your school education programs with you, but they're too big now, aren't they?
Well, every one of them did. And, they've outgrown the going to schools anymore. So
the leash. You don't put them on a leash anymore and walk them around.
No.
All right, well, we're going to head off to Mount Vernon, Maine. Now, a white Siberian tiger named Makina has been donated to the DEW Animal Kingdom and Sanctuary by tiger breeders in southern United States.
Yeah.
Now, the visitors can see the female cub, who is being fed formula several times a day. Mm. WCSH-TV reported that the officials hope to get Makina to breed with another tiger when she's old enough.
Why would they want to do that? Are they trying to make more white tigers?
I suppose that's what their idea is.
Well, that's silly. White tigers, our listeners, the majority of these tigers are inbred, and they're raised this way and they're bred this way to sell. And this is silly. There's no reason for it absolutely at all.
That's right. That's why we don't marry our cousins.
Well, then, yeah. The same idea.
Exactly.
Oh, that's the comment of the year, Henry.
All right, now we're going to head up the river without a paddle, Glasgow, Montana. The paddlefish harvest season has closed on the Upper Missouri River section from Fort Benton to Fort Peck Dam. Now, the Fish, Wildlife, and Parks Commission gave the approval to close the 2011 harvest season this last Saturday after anglers caught 390 paddlefish. Now, the harvest quota is 500, but they decided to close early. Now, they also have a catch-and-release program that runs to June 15th, so if you haven't caught your paddlefish this year, get out there, and you've got a couple more weeks to do that. Have you ever been paddled by a paddlefish?
No, but life's not over yet. It may be.
Yeah, me either.
Maybe something I can look forward to.
Now, I want all you hunters out there to listen to this story. Great Falls, Montana. A golden eagle that nearly died from ingesting lead has recovered and has been released. Now, the Great Falls Tribune said the bird was found nearly paralyzed and starving in early March. The eagle was taken to a wildlife center in Helena and later was treated at the Raptor Rehabilitation Center in Bozeman. Now, what happens is, a hunter will go out, shoot a rabbit, shoot a duck, whatever. Sometimes they don't kill, they get away. Makes them easy prey for the eagles or other birds of prey. And they ingest the buckshot, And that's what's happened here. So, as Larry Batson says, for the price of a shotgun shell, you could buy a hamburger.
That's right. Yeah, I've never, for a box of them, you could go buy yourself a chicken if you're
that's
hungry.
That's right.
That's why hunting squirrels never made any sense to me, because you've got to cook them for 2 days before you can eat them. And go buy a chicken. I mean, guys.
Yeah. Go buy a chicken. Yeah, exactly.
That's right.
All right, now, all along our coastlines, it's going on all along our coastlines. The Marine Fishery Agents warn anglers and beachgoers to be on the lookout for endangered sea turtles as the reptiles move into the coastal waters as the temperatures warm. Now, sea turtles have been spotted all along the coast. They're just moving in everywhere. So beware. It's against the law to harass them while they're nesting, while they're laying eggs. You can get in a lot of trouble. Leave the turtles alone.
That's
now,
right.
while we're talking turtle, the Department of Natural Resources is asking the recreational crabbers to be sure their crab pots have turtle excluder devices, TEDs. Now, the agency receives reports every year of diamondback terrapins that are trapped and drowned in crab pots lacking the turtle excluder devices. Now, the device consists of a rectangular frame that keeps the turtles from getting in. It's a real simple device, but it also allows the crabs to get in. So if you plan on doing any crabbing, you better have one of these things, because if not, you're going to get in trouble.
Oh, that's a great idea. Yeah. We love the baby turtles.
All right. Now, I call this story a bush tail.
Uh-oh.
Lewiston, Idaho. A long tail sticking out of the shrubbery was the first clue that a cougar had taken up residence near a grocery store in Lewiston. Now, the 80 to 100-pound male cat was captured after a wildlife biologist shot it with a tranquilizer dot. Now, the fish and game officials are seeking a zoo or a research facility that can take the animal in. So anybody out there that can handle a 100-pound mountain lion, give them a call.
There you go.
All right. Now, years ago, you used to have an award-winning pet shop in Speedway, Indiana. And I know several years you won awards for being one of the best pet shops in Indiana. And why am I telling our listeners this? Well, one of the little creatures used to sell at your pet shop is in our fun facts for the night.
Oh!
The Tokay Gecko.
The Tokay Gecko.
Now, the Tokay Gecko is from Eastern Asia and is one of the best climbers in the world. The pads of its fingers and toes have tiny hair-like projections that can grip like a suction cup or Velcro. Now, they're able to grip a sheet of glass, scale walls, and even run across the ceiling without falling.
You know, we used to sell quite a few Tokay Geckos for people that had bug problems in their apartments or homes. And the little lizard walks the walls. They are nocturnal. You wouldn't see them at all during the day, but at night you would hear the little pitter-patter of little feet as they wander through your apartment or home. But they would eat everything. I mean, they were, and really, you think about it, it's a little safer than using pesticides. So, whatever.
Well, I agree.
Yeah,
well, that's the Wild World News tonight.
Oh, as always, a fine job by Dr. Henry Day. We'd like to thank for sponsoring the Wild World News our underwriter, RadioMom.fm, and the home of the Radio Mom Shop, where you can save 50, 60, 70% on vacations, restaurants, and a variety of other goods and services. And, hey, listen to my show, The 70s on Sunday, 12 to 7 each Sunday at RadioMom.fm. Also, big thanks to iKidsFishing.com. It's the first kids fishing show in the USA, starring kids teaching kids how to fish. 40 million fishermen spending $45 billion a year. The iKids Fishing Show is a keeper. More info at We Want You Cottages at Chautauqua Lake in western New York. That website, www.wewantyou.com. It's one of America's finest fishing resorts. Also, Santee Cooper Country in beautiful South Carolina. Lake Marion and Lake Moultrie, known as Santee Cooper Lakes, 171,000 acres, 450 miles of shoreline. Fantastic fishing, amazing golf. Go to their website, SanteeCooperCountry.org. Those are our underwriters that make it possible for Larry Batson's Wild World to be on Blog Talk Radio.
Back home again in Indiana, and it seems that I can see the gleaming candlelight still shining bright through the sycamores for me. The new mown hay sends all its fragrance through the fields I used to roam. When I dream about the moonlight on the Wabash, then I long for my Indiana home.
All right, all the way from St. Louis, Missouri. What a thrill. Musical icon here in Indiana, the honorable, distinguished, and still rocking and partying with the best of them, Asher Ben Ruby. Hi, Asher.
Well, I'll tell you what, Larry, that was pretty interesting stuff you and Doc were doing over there, man. I didn't even know about any of that kind of stuff because it's kind of like you take bats for granted and you don't know that they're really kind of like helping the environment and all that kind of stuff. And then, golly, man, mind saying this in a wrong way, but I don't know where you guys come up with all that stuff, man. It is a wild world.
It is a wild world. It is.
Yeah.
Well, you know, they tell us that a colony of bats will eat about 2,000 pounds of mosquitoes in a season.
Really?
That's a lot of mosquitoes. I mean, yeah.
Right
so,
on.
Remember
when
you know,
people were scared of bats because they thought bats were going to rip your hair out if you run into a bat?
Yeah, and they're really a great thing. Though I will tell you a story, Asher. You remember the old television program Wild Kingdom?
I do.
With Jim Fowler and Marlon Perkins.
Yeah.
Well,
right.
They were down in Brazil, and for some reason they were doing a show in the Amazon. I don't know what they were chasing at the time, but one of the members of the crew they had to get out of the jungle because every night for some reason a vampire bat would come into that tent and basically almost suck him dry. They had to go get
no kidding. Wow.
Yeah, so some
bats
you have to watch that out for. But
oh, really?
Yeah, but the ones
here. I tell you what, man. I was listening to you guys, and that was really some interesting stuff. I salute you guys on that.
Well, thank you very much. I consider that.
I ain't stroking, man. I'm for real there. I didn't know that stuff, man, and just sit there and listen to you guys, two experts at it, and then they're just talking about it so kind of like, oh, well, matter-of-factly, it's like, golly, this is a whole different world, a wild world, like we said.
Well, I'll tell you, Asher, I've wanted you on the show because we have so much fun, and I thought, well, I remember the days, we were talking about this earlier on the air, when I was in Bloomington, Indiana, I was about 20 years old, and I ran an exotic animal shop. And I'd usually get done about 9 o'clock, 10 o'clock at night. Of course, here I was this young man, and I wanted to go out and see what was going on in Bloomington. And Asher,
right.
Bloomington is a great town for that, right?
Right on. I tell you what, man, all kinds of great memories there.
Well, there was a little place right down the street from us there on Walnut, the Bluebird, and I would never miss a night when I knew Pure Funk was in there.
Oh, man, I tell you what, we used to tear that place up. All of IU would come to the Bluebird with legal or illegal IDs. They got in there one way or another. Remember, we opened up that place. It was a guy named, golly, John and Doug were the names of the guys, and they had no idea of nightclubbing. And so they brought me in, and I gave them all kinds of ideas as to what to do with this club, what bands to book to help them out in the early days. And
mm-hmm.
And, you know, that's for me going out clubbing with, you know, the bands that I was in at that particular point in time and before. And a lot of good lessons learned there. So we were able to set up the Bluebird, and just because of the kind of bands that they had in there, not only Pure Funk at that time, but, they brought in the Chosen Few, they brought in Faith Band, they brought in just all kinds of great bands and from all over as it grew, from all over. And the student body there, along with the... I guess the faculty packed that place, man. It was packed. I mean, if it wasn't packed, it was full. It was always full, you know?
It was.
Yeah.
And what?
Yeah, somebody told me they still got our Pure Funk picture up on the wall over there. So, collector's item to say the least.
It should be. And what a hotbed. When you mentioned those bands, I just got cold chills because what an incredible group of musicians between the Faith Band and you guys and Chosen Few. I mean, Indiana had some fantastic musical entertainment back then.
Had all kinds of great talent as far as musicianship was concerned. For some reason, you know, I mean, Faith Band clicked to a certain level, Roadmaster clicked to a certain level, but nobody got the break that a lot of these great bands should have got out of there. Champion was another great band. So many bands out of Indianapolis, out of northern Indiana, too. We had a company back then, me and Terry Barnes. He ran Faith Band. I ran Roadmaster Pure Funk at that particular point in time. We started up a company called Top Banana Talent out of Indianapolis. Mm-hmm. And we just booked everybody. We opened up Broad River, man, when the patio was like losing business. Across the street from the patio was the early days of Sunshine Promotions and the early days of Top Banana Talent. We hooked up with Chubby Wadsworth out there, for example, put a lot of good bands in there, and bam, it just started thriving. And now, I'm not saying I'm the guy responsible for Broad River, but I'm saying those were the early days, man, and now Broad River, of course, is a mecca.
Oh, it is, and the talent that's gone through Broad River. I mean, that fantastic theater, the Vogue.
The guys who ran the Bluebird came up to Indianapolis and bought the Vogue, and me and Terry Barnes and Joe Halderman helped them out with that acquisition and set that thing in motion also back in that particular day. And it was another great, step to the greatness of what Broad Ripple is. One of the great things I remember about this situation is that Indianapolis and Broad Ripple could meld, but at the same time they kept their own separate identities. You know, we played at places like the Bluebird. We never fit into Nick's, but Nick's was another great place in Broad Ripple. And, of course, Dunn Meadow was the hippie haven, man. Mm-hmm. Ran rampant in those days.
Yeah, it was an amazing place. And the Vogue, for instance, the bands that went through there, gosh, I don't even know where to begin. Todd Rundgren, not too long ago. Well, I 20 years ago. Wang Chung, fantastic entertainment played in that little burg. I mean, it was amazing.
Yeah.
So how did it all start for you, Alistair? How did you get going in this?
Well, I used to listen to music on, I think it was the WIFE Good Guys.
Oh, yeah.
And I used to listen to them at night in my room, transistor by my pillow, you know, so mom and pop wouldn't hear me, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I could control the volume and they wouldn't hear me. And I'd listen to all the rock and roll at night. And I saw, you know, Elvis on TV, on Ed Sullivan, for example, Temptations, all this Motown stuff. I went to Shortridge High School, so we're big into Motown because I was a predominantly black high school and just had some great influences as far as coming from the African-American community is concerned. But when I saw the Beatles and the Stones on Ed Sullivan, the next day after I saw the Beatles, I combed my hair in the opposite direction so it looked like I had bangs. And from that point on, man, I said, you know, I want to do this. And, you know, we wound up hooking up our original band with Frenchie and the Wee Wees. And that was out of Shortridge High School. And then, you know, we took it, went to college, Indiana University, and we started up Pure Funk, which became Roadmaster after we started doing a lot of original type material.
Mm-hmm.
And then, transitions occurred, and I wound up in the radio business, and I got to go to some great radio stations in their particular era, like WNAP, Kiss 99 was a predecessor to a lot of what Top 40 radio is now. And then I got to be on another one of the great rock and roll stations in the country, and that was DC 101 in its heyday, and then come here to St. Louis after that and do KC 95 and a couple other stations that I was on here, and I had some MTV in the middle of all that deal, too. So I've had a great and fruitful life in this media business here and just joyous at it.
Well, do you have a favorite moment? I've asked several of our musical guests, where you've said to yourself in your in that particular moment that this job's just way too cool?
Oh, yeah. Well, I tell you, one of the great moments was in my early days at WNAP. Mm-hmm. We were looking for various promotions to do, and I hooked up with Mayor Hudnut at the time, and I believe it was his re-election time, and I put together a thing where people would rename Meridian Street. So I went to the mayor's office and got permission to do this from the mayor, went back to my station, got permission to go ahead and do it at the station, and we wound up renaming, if I can remember, it was Greengrass and High Tides Forever Boulevard, like Stairway to Heaven, Stairway to Heaven Avenue, a couple other names like that from some of the big hits of the day. And the Indianapolis WNAP listeners, they voted for Stairway to Heaven Avenue. We renamed Meridian Street from 38th all the way down to the Circle, Stairway to Heaven Avenue. And that night, we threw a humongous party right there where Market Square Arena used to be.
Mm-hmm.
And the and it was just, I was just hopping, man. It was just unbelievable. That was one of my first big promotional experiences, and, mm-hmm. and just a fantastic memory over there. All kinds of great memories at all the stations. You know, I had opportunity to interview all these rock stars along the way. So all kinds of great rock star stories too. First one comes to mind is, I'll never forget this, when I first moved to St. Louis, man. I was new in St. Louis. I kind of didn't know all the streets, didn't know all the people, like I did in D.C., like I did in Indianapolis, like I do now in St. Louis. And I was interviewing Eddie Money, who I knew from my time at D.C. 101, because he used to come on the show a lot with me because he's too East Coast heavy. And so he came on. I always love this story because Eddie always had like a substance abuse problem going on. And so he called in one day to the show. It was a scheduled interview. And it was because he was getting ready to come to St. Louis. So I started talking to Eddie. We knew each other. We're friends. And he starts saying, "Smash, can I say hi to some people over there?" I said, "Go ahead, Ed. Hi to so-and-so, hi to this business, hi to these people on this street and that street." Well, he's mentioning names that I was unfamiliar with. I thought, okay, well, I'm new in the market. You know, I just haven't heard of these things yet. And at the end, this is killer, man. At the end of his interview, he says, "Kansas City, I love you." And I said, I thought to myself, well, no wonder I didn't recognize any name. And I said, "Ed, we're in St. Louis here, man." He said, "Oh, man, Smash, I'm sorry. St. Louis, I love you." And that was the end of the interview. He came and did the gig a couple nights later, and then Eddie Money always tore it up, man. So that was pretty good. A lot of great memories. I'll never forget when I first moved to Washington, D.C. from Indiana. John Cougar's always been a friend of mine for, well, since forever, really. Mm-hmm. And back then it was John Cougar, John Mellencamp, of course. But yeah, back in his John Cougar days, he did a gig, I'd say, man, within about the first 3 months I was in D.C. And so I'm a new guy in D.C. trying to make my way, trying to establish a name and build myself up over there.
Yeah.
And so he said, "Smash, come on up on stage and sing." So he let me get up on stage and sing with him. I sang background on Pink Houses, I think it was.
Yeah.
And that's really how I kind of like busted out my name in D.C., man, because he introduced me as the rock and roll dude in D.C., man. And it was just a magnificent feeling because all my Indiana friends were there, because back then, you know, I, of course, knew Johnny Casella. He played with Faith Band for the longest time. Me and Toby Myers been friends for an amazing amount of years. And just everybody over there, the drummer, come on, who's the drummer? I got so many good stories, man, but go ahead, what's next, man? I could rap on for hours.
Well, we want you to. We've got to take a break. We're with Asher Ben Ruby all the way from St. Louis. Oh, man, fantastic. We're going to take a little break here. Folks, you're listening to Larry Batson's Wild World on Blog Talk Radio. We'll be right back.
Stay tuned.
We'll be back with more of Larry Vasson's Wild World here on Blog Talk Radio.
Ranger Station, Ranger speaking.
Yeah, hi. I'd like to report a bear sighting.
Location?
In the forest, near the side of the road.
No need for alarm, sir. The forest is where bears live.
But this was no ordinary bear.
No ordinary bear?
Yeah, one second I'm having a smoke taken in the view. Next thing I know, I am face to face with Smokey Bear.
Let me guess, Smokey had a tip for you.
He did. He must have seen me toss my cigarette on the ground. He told me never to do that because it only takes one spark to start a wildfire.
He's a smart bear. Did you know that 9 out of 10 wildfires are caused by humans? That means 9 out of 10 wildfires can be prevented.
That's what Smokey said. I had no idea.
That's why Smokey's famous, and you're not.
Good point.
Get your Smokey on. If you see someone in danger of starting a wildfire, step in and make a difference, because 9 out of 10 wildfires are caused by humans. Brought to you by Smokey Bear, the U.S. Forest Service, your state forester, and the Ad Council. Learn more at SmokeyBear.com.
Only you can prevent wildfires.
This week's episode, Bobcat in the Cave.
Gosh, Johnny, playing in the cave sure is neat.
Oh, boy, a kitty cat.
Cassie, the kitty cat's yelling. What, Cassie? It's not a kitty? It's a bobcat? Speaking of cats, you like to stress the importance of adopting cats from animal shelters? Over 5 million cats go into animal shelters every year? And with millions of healthy cats to choose from, it's a shame more people don't adopt from shelters.
This bobcat's heavy. Help, Sassy!
Why bother? We'll just get into more trouble tomorrow?
What's that supposed to mean? Oh, nuts.
Sassy is brought to you by the Ad Council and the ShelterPetProject.org. Remember, adopt.
Welcome back to Larry Vasson's Wild World here on Blog Talk Radio. Once again, here's your host, Larry Vasson.
Hello, everyone. This is Larry Vasson. You are listening to Larry Vasson's Wild World on Blog Talk Radio. We want to tell everyone next week on the program, we have a children's book author with a young man with quite an amazing story. I'm telling you, it's very uplifting. He's quite an amazing young man. Ed Petty's going to be with us. And we're going to talk about someone that's basically come from a very difficult life, and you just have to listen. It's really quite heartwarming. That'll be next week, Ed Petty on Larry Batson's Wild World. We also want to tell everyone, check out my website, LarryTheAnimalGuy.com, and our brand new Facebook page, Larry the Animal Guy and Friends. Do you ever get on that, Asher?
You know, I have recently when I know I was getting ready to come on to the program, and it's a pretty cool site. And to tell you the truth, I couldn't even believe it when I saw it, man, because you're out of, like, Indiana, and you're a wild animal type of dude. That was pretty wild.
Well, we have questions on there, so we'd love for you to participate sometimes.
Sometime, all right.
Anytime. Filled with photos and information about our animal family. Also, a big thank you to Tire Service Plus and owner Jerry Jones, taking care of America's auto maintenance needs. They keep our animal truck on the road, traveling thousands of miles with our wild animal ambassadors. Give them a call at 317-243-0700. And also McGregor Mountain Lodge in beautiful Estes Park, Colorado, on the boundaries of Rocky Mountain National Park. We call it God's Country. Go to their website, info@McGregorMountainLodge.com. They've had lots of snow in Colorado, so it's a good time to go. Go out there and enjoy the Rocky Mountains and the wildlife. I've stayed at the lodge several times. You'll have bighorn sheep and elk in your backyard. It's phenomenal. Those are some of our underwriters that make it possible for Larry Batson's Wild World to be on Blog Talk Radio.
I lived on the outskirts of town, in an 8-room farmhouse, baby, when my 4 brothers and friends were around. There was always something doing. Had me a couple of real nice girlfriends stop by to see me every once in a while. When I think about those days, all I can do is sit and smile. That's when the sport was a sport, and grooving was grooving. Dancing meant everything. We were young and we were improving. Laughing with our friends, holding hands meant something, baby. outside the club, the cherry bomb. Our hearts were really thumping. I said, yeah, yeah, yeah. I said, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Oh,
that's
man.
One of my favorite Mellencamp songs, man.
Oh, I'm telling you. Asher Ben Rudy.
We do that.
Pardon
we
me?
Do that with Smash Band. We do that with Smash Band here in St. Louis area. I got a band, Smash Band. We do that with Smash Band. And, I mean, it always, if we want to throw a song on there, but sometimes people won't dance in the early part of the show, man. When you throw on Cherry Bomb, everybody's dancing, man. I love that song.
Well, he's amazing, and he's a smart man because basically, and especially in the earlier days, he handpicked his band from all the great Indiana bands.
Yeah, yeah. Definitely. I mean, so. Kenny Aronoff, one of my favorite drummers of all time on every level. I'll never forget Kenny. We were at the Bluebird, and he was playing in a jazz fusion band back in the early days of what they called jazz fusion. Golly, I wish I remember the name of that band. And we always used to, like, poke fun at him because he wasn't rocking. He was playing that, you know, jazz fusion, man. That was some wild drumming. And then one day he became, you know, the main thumper there with Mellencamp. And now Kenny Aronoff, man, you see him playing with everybody. He is the man. He was in here for a drum clinic last year. I got to hang out with him for a while, man, just sharing all kinds of memories. Those were fantastic days back then at Indiana University. I don't know what they got going now. I just had a meeting with the IU Alumni Association. We might be bringing Smash Band down there soon. So
we'll
see what happens with all that. Oh, that'd be killer, man, because we were talking about, you know, we could do all the old songs, of course, and a lot of these alumni might have their children with them. And, you know, Smash Band, we do everything from Frank Sinatra to Lady Gaga to Lynyrd Skynyrd to John Mellencamp to originals. We do all kinds of stuff, man.
Well, I saw, I believe, on your website, one of the great songs you play, one of my favorite songs of all time, Ides of March, Vehicle.
Oh, yeah, Vehicle. Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's a song, you know, that is, I've always wanted to play in a horn-heavy band, and that's what we got here. We're just, you know, just got a killer horn section, man, as good as anybody in the business, and I ain't belittling nobody, you know, I mean, these guys are as good as Chicago if they want to be.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, when we lay down Vehicle, it sounds like a song because I've, you know, been blessed with a gritty type of voice when I sing. So it sounds like the song, you know. So that's a song that always gets them going because, you know, everybody knows that from the radio. It's the Ides of March out of Chicago, Illinois. And it's one of the great hits that we've been able to know in our lifetime as music aficionados.
Oh, man, I'll tell you. Do you have a favorite musical artist that you've known over the years with a great story involved?
Oh, yeah. You know, I've been fortunate to be able to meet a lot of them. But I'd have to say, you know, I'm an Americana type of dude. That's the stuff I like the most. I, of course, love, you know, soul music, Motown. I love, you know, the disco era, you know, and the kind of music they used to lay down there. But for me, it's really like three main guys. It's all tangent groups. Three main guys, and those main guys are Mellencamp, Springsteen, and Bob Seger. Those are the guys that, what I appreciate about those guys is, and I've seen a lot of, you know, rock and roll shows and everything, but those guys, they don't do nothing, you know, heavy with the lights, heavy with fire and explosives and all that kind of stuff, man. They just rock and roll. And, that's one of the things I admire about those guys, along with, of course, you know, their songwriting capabilities.
Well, Bob Seger's back out on tour. I understand he had a tough tour for a little while. Do you know any about that?
I don't know what the tough go is. I do remember that we got to open up for him back in East Lansing, Michigan. I don't remember which college is there. It's Michigan State or Michigan, one or the other. And there's a nightclub there. We got to open up for him. We opened up for a lot of people in that day. And I'll never forget going back to talk to him after we got done with our set. this was in between Ramblin' Gamblin' Man and before he had just the ultimate string of hits. There was a dead period in there. Mm-hmm. And we opened up for him during the dead period, and I'll never forget him. Just I walked in, I said, Bob, how you doing? And his head was in his hands, his elbows on his knees, and he was just like sulked out, you know. Mm-hmm. He looked up at me. And I just left the room. After that. he was he was like, he didn't look up mad. He just looked like, hey, man, I'm out of it right now, you know. And and so that's my Bob Seger story. I've seen him a couple, two, three times, you know, when I come back and work here in St. Louis. And just, you know, those guys just lay it out, man. And to me, you know, salute to all those with special effects and all that.
Yeah.
And but if you can go out there and just let your music move
yeah.
the people,
mm-hmm.
that's what I dig about those guys.
People don't realize what a hard job it is to be a rock and roll star. It's a lot of work.
Oh, I would imagine so, yeah. Definitely.
I mean, everyone that I've talked to, Dave Davies from the Kinks, Al Jardine of the Beach
yeah.
Boys, they said the same thing. He says, and they wish they had appreciated the moment more.
Yeah, I can believe that, you know. One of the other rock stars you failed to mention there you talked to is a guy who was a rock star when I was a younger man. It was Harlow Hickenlooper, who you had on about a week ago, whenever it was, man. That dude in my day was a rock star, him and Curly Myers.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
he was, I'll tell you what, if you have the opportunity to listen to last week's show when he was on, he was phenomenal. And I did
yeah.
mention to him that you were one of his biggest fans. And
definitely.
How much we love the Stooges.
Oh, definitely so, man. Every Saturday morning, man, we'd be watching the Stooges. Another big guy in that day was Captain Starr. Cowboy Bob was running around there. Popeye and Janie was running around town back in those early days too, man. There's a whole array of younger minded rock stars there.
Oh yes, and we've forgotten one very illustrious one that was probably the biggest of them all put together.
Jim Gerard.
Sammy. Jim Gerard.
I used to love that guy. But that's right, Larry. That's right, Larry. In fact, I watched the Sammy Terry, I watched a little piece of the Sammy Terry show about 2 weeks ago, man. And it was just hilarious for what it was in that day. It was what we nowadays would call camp, you know. It's just camp. It was magnificent.
Well, he's now in a retirement home. And his son
really?
Has taken over the legacy.
Uh-huh.
And his son looks just like him in the makeup. And,
really?
And he has the same voice.
Fantastic.
It's unbelievable. And they're doing a bit on the internet on his website. So, yeah, I'm going to have to call him up and have him on the program.
Definitely so. But imagine the stories that guy's got.
Well, I know for many of our listeners and around the world, this won't mean anything, but we did the Sammy Terry show once. We took some animals on there. And
oh, yeah?
Oh, and it's taped at 7 o'clock in the morning on Tuesdays.
Uh-huh.
So you can imagine trying to be scary at 7 in the morning on Tuesdays, which is...
Yeah, exactly.
It was, yeah.
Righto.
And he was so... And it was all ad-lib. I mean, everything was...
Yeah.
We'd go and do a bit, and he'd go, oh, what do we do now?
Yeah, right on.
Anybody have any ideas? But, yeah, it
yeah.
was pretty cool.
Another couple of heavy cats in those days, man, were a lot of these radio DJs. Jimmy Mack was big. Barney Pipp was big. Rep Porter was big. Then you got guys like at WNAP, Chris Connor and Buster Bodine and Michael T. John Griffin, all those guys, man, they were just big. Those are the guys who ruled the town in that particular era, man. You know, to be able to jump into a WNAP in that particular day, that was like a thrill on my part, because I'll never forget when they invited me to come on. They invited me to come on, like, on a Friday night. It was kind of like celebrity DJ night, and, you know, one of the Pacers would come in, one of the 500 drivers might come in, so they had me come in because people knew me from Roadmaster. And I brought in a box of records. I played my favorite records and just did what I did in the band back then, you know, sang a song, told a joke, and played a record, told a joke. And then they offered me a job on the following Tuesday, and they offered me like $90 a week. And I remember busting my rear end with Roadmaster out on the road and paid all the bills and all that, and we wound up with like $50 a piece. And I thought, man, I could make $90 and not have to leave town. So I thought, well, I don't think I'm going to do bands anymore, man, because I'm working at a $40 profit right there on the week at least. And so that it turned out to be a fantastic opportunity. It's pretty wild. This is the first time I've ever heard this phrase before, but I remember when they brought me in there, they said, we're giving you the opportunity to fail. And I guess that's, you know, kind of like to twist it around to make a positive of it. But I thought, man, why would you give somebody the opportunity to fail? I'm going to take it as an opportunity to succeed. And so, you know, between being able to be, you know, the kind of self-promoter I've always been and yet have a radio station to back you in an appropriate manner, that was just great days. And then you know, came time, a dark period, let's say, and in that dark period I said, I'm leaving. I went over to KISS 99, early days of, you know, true top 40 radio as we know it today. I mean, you know, you could argue WIFE was top 40 in its day and all that. But KISS 99 was like the predecessor to what we know as, I don't know what they, I don't really think they call it top 40 anymore. Contemporary hit radio or something is what they call it nowadays. And then, you know, I was Howard Stern's announcer for 2 years.
Oh, really?
KISS 99. I'd send tapes out there. You're listening to the Howard Stern show, that kind of stuff, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And then after 2 years, one of the guys flew in from D.C., came and talked to me, and said, we'd like you to come on out and do afternoons. So it was Stern in the morning, Smash in the afternoons, and then Stern, I love that guy. He just got crazy, wound up getting fired, and then they brought a fellow named Greaseman in, who was a phenomenal entertainer in his own right, and we wound up ruling that town. That was fantastic.
That's a great town.
Told me to thank you. Yeah, D.C. I love, man, but I've been fortunate to be in three great cities, St. Louis, D.C., and Indianapolis. New York, too. I lived in New York for a very short period of time. I was doing MTV, mm-hmm. and he told me to think of some things, and I recently got voted the number 36 out of the top 40 greatest moments in MTV history. They gave me number 36, man.
Oh, really?
That was pretty cool to be go down a history like that. That's when I interviewed Guns N' Roses. And they started tearing the studio apart at the end of the interview. And just, it was magnificent. First of all, you know, those guys came in, and you know, being on MTV, man, I had to babysit Cher's kid one time. Elijah Blue was this kid's name. I spent like an afternoon playing pinball games with this kid, man. I was Cher's babysitter while she did all her MTV stuff. Just all kinds of great memories, but this thing with Guns N' Roses, man, this was the last day we were going to use the set. So I go to the producer. I say, you know, this is the last day we're going to use the set. Why don't we do a rock and roll destruction type of thing, like bands destroy hotel rooms and all that kind of stuff, and just let these guys tear up the set?
Yeah.
And he said, yeah. And so I told Axl and Slash, and they were stoned, man. They were just... straight up stone, man. I never forget. I'm looking at, in my mind's eye right now, I'm looking at those guys. I remember it so well. And they said, oh, yeah, man. And so they started destroying the thing on cue. And I don't know how it happened, but this huge beam, a 4x4 beam came and just knocked me in the head. And I didn't get knocked out, but I acted like I did. And that was the perfect capper on this deal. And so number 36, greatest moment in MTV history, buddy. Mighty Adam Smasher.
You know, that's absolutely brilliant, Asher, to come up with that idea. I mean, that's absolutely brilliant.
Well, it was just on the spot. I don't know if it was brilliant. It was just like, man, you know, this. I didn't want to just say, okay, well, thank you, guys. That was a great interview. Have a good road trip, you know. When I thought of that, I thought, man, this is the way. I hope the producers will go for it, and they did, man. So, you know, thank you, Lord. It worked out good for everybody.
So the whole MTV thing. Who were some of the other artists you had a chance to interview and talk to?
Oh my goodness,
endless.
All kinds of them. I did Headbangers Ball for a while there. So talked to Ozzy. I can't remember who the Headbangers of that day is at this particular point in time. But you know, we got to. I was his first big type of experience for me because I was doing like the morning show on MTV. Mm-hmm. And I was getting fan mail from, like, all over the world, man. It was wild. And I've never seen nothing like it. Now, of course, all these guys, well, they didn't even play music on the TV anymore, but
no.
These guys with emails and all that kind of stuff, we're still doing, you know, letters, licking stamps and all that kind of stuff back then.
Mm-hmm.
And just all kinds of great opportunities there. And I was kind of like a segue guy. There was a guy named Mark Goodman. There was a guy named Mark Goodman who was leaving. A guy named Adam Curry was coming in.
And so
they employed me to be the segue guy there. So I got about 6 months out of that whole deal, man. That was pretty cool.
I'll bet. That's so Ozzy, what was he? I'm almost a brain dead.
Golly, I tell you, in all honesty, this is one of the great interviews. I wish I had tape of this stuff, man. This is one of the great interviews, personal opinion, of course.
Yeah.
Because anything I'd ask him, you couldn't understand a word this guy was saying, because he had two things going. The guy was stoned and he was British. So number one, you can't understand the British accent.
Yeah.
Number two, you put stoned on top of it, and you can't understand anything. So it don't matter what I ask him, you know, Ozzy, you talk like that back in that day. You can understand Ozzy now compared to what it was back in that day. But that was all kinds of fun. You know, just being able to, you know, I've been blessed that I've been able to be on the stage as a musician, performer, entertainer. And when it came time to be a broadcaster, I knew from where these guys were coming. So, you know, I never got starstruck from any of them, because I knew what they were going through, and I appreciated what they were doing, what they were going through. I appreciated their creative process. And, that's why I was always casual with these cats, and I think that's why, you know, I'll never forget, man, Van Halen, you know, interviewing them, and then I had moved to St. Louis, and so I'm working at KC95, doing a morning show over there. Mm-hmm. Van Halen's in town, we're sponsoring it, I'm announcing the show, and I walk into the dressing room where Eddie and Michael and Alex and Sammy were, and Sammy saw me and ran and jumped into my arms, like you see in these commercials where people run and jump into each other's arms, you know?
Yeah.
He jumped into my arms, and I caught him and held him like you'd hold a child. He just kept screaming, smash, smash, dig in the smash. That was my motto back then, smash, smash, dig in the smash. Still use that. But I'll never forget that, because that was kind of like an endorsement of sorts for me, for what I was doing, because here these dudes were, you know, just heavy in the world of music, and these guys, you know, who I got to interview on MTV, and they remembered me, man, and like I said, Sammy jumped into my arms, man, and it was kind of a thrill, because it was an endorsement of sorts, meaning
right.
that I did something good with these guys, you know, in the past, and bang, here we are, just having a good time, and you know, I had a good time with them before, during, and after the show, man.
Oh, I'll bet. There's,
yeah.
I've discovered over the few interviews that we've done on this program that the rock guys are just pretty darn nice.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, I like I said, I got blessed to be in the broadcasting business in the first place, got blessed to be, you know, musically inclined before that, and, you know, like the fairy tale goes, put them together, what do you got, bibbidi bobbidi boo. There it is, man. So it's been good, and I've been blessed with, you know, a good family life here. And, you know, my first family, I messed up because I wasn't a very good guy, and
yep.
I lost that. And then, you know, I got a second chance out of it all. And so, you know, I got three kids. My boy Abraham,
wow.
He's 42 right now. I got my son Isaac, he's 26. He's an economist. He's a banker. And then my son Jacob, I'm going to have Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, like in the Bible, you know?
Yep.
And the Jacob came out a girl, so we named him Ava. So that's what I got two boys and a girl.
So are you a grandpa yet, Asher?
No, not a grandpa yet. And, you know, that would be a weird feeling, but probably a joyous feeling too, you know? But I'm like, you know, I'm like 61 years old, but I'm like 30 in my mind, still rocking, still rolling.
Oh,
I never thought when I first started my first band with my partners over there in Shoreridge High School, back when we were 16, 17 years old, I would never thought at 61 that I'd still be, you know, playing rock and roll, man. It's the wildest thing. And playing some of the songs we did back then in the 60s.
Oh, I know it. And the kids right now are just, well, I say kids, the young people are just discovering this amazing music that we grew up with. I feel so lucky to grow up that when I did, through the Beatles and Hendrix, Led Zeppelin. And, oh, it's incredible.
Yeah, because what these kids don't know, and even though, you know, it might be first for them, what they're really catching is the trickle down. Because we were there when it really kind of started there with Elvis and Chuck Berry and all those guys. Maybe, you know, even as far as pop is concerned, you know, Frank Sinatra, Vic Damone, you know, Bing Crosby, all those guys before then led to those guys and then the Beatles. And, you know, we got to see all that, man. We got to experience all that. We got to love all that. And and here we are, you know.
We're
still, you know, musically inclined, like I said.
Oh, absolutely. It was so exciting whenever in those days, especially in 64 and 65, when a new record would come out and kids go, what's a record? A new 45.
Yeah.
And
right.
Going to, you remember the Lyric Record Shop?
Sure, that's right, the Lyric Record Shop. Wow.
Going
there. You know, back, I remember that was back before Karma came in, and Karma kind of took over the whole record scene over there, man. Yeah.
But you'd go in there.
Karma was big in its day, man.
Oh, it was. It was huge. It was huge. And you'd go in there, and they'd have listening booths where you could listen to the latest music. And,
right.
And I always thought, well, gosh, those bands that we enjoyed so much, the Stones, the Beatles, and Dave Clark Five, and on and on and on. Gosh, if they would have the sound equipment that the bands have nowadays and the equipment.
Yeah.
Plus the promotion. I mean, now it's just
plus
the internet.
Right.
And networks like MTV and VH1, they would have been.
But you know what? You know what, Larry?
Yeah.
And you know, salute to those guys for having that kind of electronic access and all that. But there ain't nothing like going and hitting the road and pounding it out in the different clubs, in the different high schools, colleges. That's where you actually knew whether you were truly accepted in that day, because you had to do it in front of people, man.
Yeah.
That's how you found out if you were any good, man. You'd go to different cities where people didn't know you. And if you made it, then you knew you were good. You know, the early days, at least my early days of rock and roll in Indianapolis, there were great bands back then, like the Delvados was a band out of Shoreridge High School, Melvin Johnson, a bunch of guys, Al Bierman, a bunch of guys there. And then Boys Next Door were a big kind of like Beach Boy type of band out of Indianapolis. Sir Winston and the Commons were a humongous band. There's a club called Tiger of Go-Go downtown. I think it was we used to go over there. The Nora Teen Barn, Teen Village, Jewish Community Center, man, all kinds of great places to see music. And back then, we were such newbies to it, we didn't kind of, in a way, didn't know what we were looking at, you know?
No.
Didn't know, and it was fantastic.
As we said earlier, it was a great time to grow up, and I have to say that, Asher, that you were as a young man, that pure funk and your music was a very big part of my life. It's been absolutely fantastic to talk to you tonight.
Well, my pleasure. I appreciate you even wanting to hook this thing up and let the folks that listen to your radio show here, your blogosphere show here, even spend a little time with me, man, because it's been a number of years since I've been back to Indiana. So
well,
it's kind of like going back home with you.
Oh, we need a little smash here in Indianapolis. So I hope definitely that your band gets to Indy. I'll tell you what, I'll be there and I'll say, hey, what's that?
Right on.
And it's
well, everybody can check it all out at smashband.com. It's got all my stuff on there.
And they will, and I'll make sure that everybody knows. It's been a fantastic hour, Asher. Gosh, we really appreciate you coming on. It was
my pleasure, buddy. I appreciate you.
Oh, what a great show, Dr. Day.
I agree. Asher, Adam Smasher, great to hear your voice again.
Thanks a lot, Doc.
I want to thank Melissa Hovey and Wayne Larson. As I mentioned earlier, next week on the program, children's book author Ed Petty has an amazing story growing up, and I ask everyone to listen. It's going to be quite fantastic, and tonight's program as well. You can download it free of charge at Blog Talk Radio. We'd like to thank Asher Ben Ruby for being on tonight. This is Larry Batson, and you have been listening to Larry Batson's Wild World on this magical network known as Blog Talk Radio. Good night, everybody.
Thanks for listening this week to Larry Batson's Wild World. Sure to join us again next week at 10 p.m. for more of the latest outdoor and wildlife news and information, along with great tales from your host, world-renowned wildlife expert, Mr. Larry Batson. Tune in again next week for another exciting edition of Larry Batson's Wild World. Larry Batson's Wild World is a Batson Wildlife Educational Services production in association with Blog Talk Radio.